And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to 17 nights away, Mr. Lucas Buer, until your Golden Gophers take on the Fighting Buffalo Bulls in the opener. It doesn't feel like it's real. I've seen a couple of practices now. I have another one to go to tomorrow. So if you're somehow listening to this before 11 a.m. Central on Tuesday and you look at your schedule right now, I mean literally right now, and see you have an opening over your lunchtime, head on down to Huntington Bank Stadium so you can see the final open practice on Tuesday. But it's something. As I'm sure you also can hear in the background, Luke, I've got kitty war crimes from my foster kittens that are not happy that I am not paying attention to them.
And I hear now that you have a hard stop thanks to the kitties, which is totally fine. That's totally fine. So we got to really get into it. And as one of our,
you have babysitter duties, or you have to go pick up your kids.
I do.
I have to go off my kids to prospective adopters is what I have to do.
Yeah. And Evan, one of the podcast or one of the Spotify comments was like, love the show guys, but I'm 15 minutes in of the yapping and stalling about the episode title. So we got to get to the title more quickly. That's good feedback, Evan. We take that wholeheartedly. Another listener actually said that this was certified listenable. So that's good, which was in response to the unlistenable we got previously. I also like this one. There are great comments on all these. People like you're an EDM guy, Ryan. Also, someone else said, because of this podcast, I say, to your point, in every conversation now, keep up the excellent work.
I'm trying my best here, and I'm aware that my analogies, especially the one about
the eating your plate. Yeah, that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's my call to action, as the kids would say in the business there. I need something else to fixate on during the season, or else you all are going to throw virtual shade at me.
I thought, was it on Perrin Asper, your shotgun analogy? That wasn't too
bad. Oh, my gosh.
That wasn't too bad.
The amount of people I heard from that either didn't understand it or didn't agree with it, I was like, okay, well, either way, I can't use that, but that's fine. I tried to use like an Alumacraft, like off the lake analogy. Like I'm aware I am the captain of horrible analogies. So what I want our listeners to do is if you have something you want me to work in, you know, we now read the Spotify comments. So please leave them in there. We're doing our best, but it's exciting, Luke, because like I said, 17 days away, which means today we're going to be talking about the Gopher defense and some Gopher special teams. We've also got on the books for later this week. I'm going to assume Luke's going to put that one out Thursday morning. We're going to get Daniel House back on the podcast. Yes. And we're going to do our all Big Ten draft, of which I forget, Mr. Buer, who won that draft last year?
Yeah, that would be you, Ryan. Congratulations. It was your
first win. I didn't even know. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me as our reigning king.
Yeah, I'm going to get all the stats put together. And we'll talk about him then with Daniel. I'm excited to have a chance to chat with him again. He's always a blast to talk with. But in the end, you know, we want to be able to talk some football. We've got a lot to get through. We're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball, and I think it's really important, Ryan. When we talk about defense, we are on. Let's see, a third coordinator in third consecutive season. So tell us a little bit about Danny Collins, what we can probably expect from him as the new signal caller for the defense.
Well, I would tell you there's a wonderful story that people can go and read on GopherIllustrated.com, of which I will remind people, if you want daily Gopher talk, if you want practice reports, if you want guys I'm high on, season predictions, yada, yada, especially now that we're getting close to the opener, you can feel that Gopher itch coming on more and more. It's 50% off Gopher Illustrated until, I believe, the opener, which, why does that matter, Mr. Luke Buer? Was there a Paramount type of
announcement?
Partnership, I'll say, announced today?
Yeah, I messaged you today. I was like, why are you not promoting the fact that now, if you're a full member of Gopher Illustrated, you could get Paramount included, which you do, and which I take advantage of with my kids. There's lots of content that they want. But now you can also watch the I guess UFC is not going to do pay-per-view anymore, so they're going to partner with Paramount, which that'll allow you to watch pay-per-view. And Ryan, there is a up-and-coming fighter that is a former Gopher. Am I not wrong?
Yeah, Bailey Schoenfelder. The pride of, I forget where it is, and that's going to bother me.
And he goes by Berserk, if I remember correctly. He's boys with, like, I'm trying to remember.
I think he's Cole from Keith. Huron, South Dakota. Okay, so
isn't he,
my Dakota people, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but isn't he's buddies with, like, Coy Keefe and those folks, right? I think I maybe met his parents one. I don't remember.
Kind of that area out there. But yeah, now that UFC is going to be streamed exclusively on Paramount Plus going forward, I'll remind you, once you get off the promotional period of your Gopher Illustrated membership, you get Paramount Plus for free. Now, it's kind of sad to me that the days of pay-per-view for random fights on UFC aren't going to be there. But if you're a Gopher Illustrated member, guess what? You get Paramount Plus for free once you get off the promotional period.
Is the Danny Collins article behind the paywall?
No, it's free now.
So even if you're not a member, you could read that, and then that could be your dip into Ryan's writing material before you get into the community aspect of the message board.
Yeah, and that's where Danny Collins has had quite the life. And I say that as a guy who's, I think, 4 months younger than him, where he has been with PJ Fleck since his days at Western Michigan. He's not a former football player in stature. You'd understand why. But, I mean, he's the story of him being an unpaid volunteer coach where at Western Michigan, he's sleeping in, I would call it, his storage closet because he didn't have really anywhere to go. Then works his way up the food chain, gets to Minnesota as a quality control guy. He and Joe Rossi really hit it off. I think one of my favorite stories, too, from Danny Collins is the 2019 year, right before that Penn State game, which is arguably the most hyped game of the Fleck tenure. Danny Collins on Thursday night was delivering DoorDash.
Oh, really?
Doing Uber Eats, just trying to make bills and things like that. But that's the life he had to live to try and live out his dream, which is now fulfilled in becoming a Big Ten defensive coordinator and one of the youngest Power 2, Power 4 coordinators in all of college football at the age of 33. So he's got a fascinating rise, one that, as Luke said, you can probably just put into your Google machine, Danny Collins 24/7, and I'm sure the rise of Danny Collins story will show up. But the thing I would tell people about this Danny Collins defense, at least for this year, is the word multiple or versatility is going to be something we talk about extensively over this podcast to the point where it's going to be nauseating at times. And it's even nauseating for me at two Gopher practices to see the amount of what I will say sub packages that Danny is deploying, because there's a lot of players on this Gopher defense that are going to be very new, very inexperienced, working in new spots. And that's what has to happen when you're replacing Jod Joyner, Danny Strigow, Cody Lindenberg, Justin Wally, Ethan Robinson, Jack Henderson. I'm sure there's a few others that folks would want me to name, but I'm talking multi-year starters that played at a high level. And it's unfortunate, like for a guy like Justin Wally, by the way, that he unfortunately tore his ACL. Sounds like he was trending towards potentially starting for the Colts in week one. So prayers out to he and his family there, but there's just so many inexperienced spots that the theory that you're going to hear as we go position by position here from Collins is we're going to try to hide the weaknesses of certain guys and then really play to the strengths of certain guys. Mm-hmm. And that's where I will tell you this before I'll let you interject here, Luke. We got to talk to Maverick Baranowski, who is going to be a starting linebacker for your Golden Gophers this fall. And I asked him, I think I was the one who asked him, is this the most amount of sub packages you've been around? Because Maverick was recruited by Joe Rossi. He was coached by Corey Heatherman last year, now under Danny Collins. And he said, yeah, this is a lot. And again, on a given week, they're not going to have all of this in. But I think for Danny, at least during the first 2 weeks, he's trying to figure out what does everybody do well? What does everybody not do well? How much is too much? What isn't? and trying to figure all that out, because now that we're in week three of camp, I would tell you that I think a lot of the people on staff know what they have. Now it's trying to fine tweak it and try to figure out what they all have, but it's still going to be a 4-2-5 defense. It's still going to be something to where Danny is very, very close to Joe Rossi. Those two were quality control guys for many years together. Joe Rossi is the one that stuck out his neck for Danny Collins to PJ and to say, this guy should be a position coach. He's earned it. He got it. He's the one who recruited Coy Parrish to this university, Kerry Brown to this university, has developed them. And so you're going to see a little bit of, I think, a combination of Rossi and Heatherman type of styles, but it's also going to be the Danny Collins, as he calls it, havoc defense, Mr. Buehr.
Yeah, it should be interesting to watch him in year one and see the stylistic difference that he has from Heatherman and from Rossi, even though I think most people will remember they approach defense in two drastically different ways. So I'm very curious to see what it's going to look like. I don't expect it to be exactly smooth right away, but I do expect him to have and show results. I have really the utmost confidence in him, having never seen him call a game, but just knowing how he's developed safeties and specifically recruited safeties. And so I really think that he had the opportunity to be around two different perspectives. I think that's really valuable for coaches, right? Not to see one thing. And hopefully, as you know, you've maybe heard Nico Medved talk about as he's come in as the Gopher basketball coach, really be himself, right? Nico Medved really found success when he started to do what he wanted to do and instead of trying to implement someone else. And you can already see that Danny Collins has started to do that in a way. And maybe a natural segue, Ryan, is to start to talk about defensive backs. You mentioned that he was instrumental in bringing in Coy Parrish from a recruiting perspective, as well as Kerry Brown, right? If you look at defensive back, there are some really key departures. As you mentioned, Justin Wally, who was injured recently for the Indianapolis Colts, Ethan Robinson, Jack Henderson. Many will remember Coleman Bryson, the MVP of I forget which bowl game, right?
2022 Pinstripe Bowl to you.
Yeah, there we go. He's gone. You've got a fair number of returners as well, but there's just not a lot of proven commodity outside of Parrish. And Kerry Brown and Aiden Goosby, right? But then you look at corner. That's the real big question mark for this defense.
Yeah, I was about to say. I mean, I think they're about as proven as they can be at safety. And if you don't think they're proven there, you're really not gonna like the rest of the defense, because outside of like defensive tackle, they haven't really proven anything.
Yeah,
but safety in theory should be the strength of the defense. Which is so funny to say, because 12 months ago on this very edition of the preview,
we were
talking about how it's the biggest question mark in the defense. And I think the rationale behind that was sound. I still do. I mean, to know that Coy Parrish was going to come on just shot out of a cannon.
Well, Kerry Brown too, right? And Goosby as well. Like all three of them played really well. And to your point, Ryan, it wasn't that we didn't think they could have potential. It's just like you don't have the evidence to prove that they've done it before. I think there's a lot of that for this Gopher football team in general. But to your point, it was sound logic at the time. They just proved to be able to step up to the plate.
Yeah, and that's where now they have to take another step forward, and you have to hope that none of them, I would call it sophomore slumps, where technically Coy Parrish and Kerry Brown are sophomores now. They're year apart, and then we can get into Aiden Goosby as a redshirt junior, but all three of those guys took steps forward last fall, and they can't really afford for one of them even to not continue to get better, and that's where Coy... I mean, he's the next ball hawking free safety you've seen in line with Tyler Newbin, Antoine Winfield. You're going to see him do some things on offense. You're going to see him do some things in the return game, but he's going to be your free safety. Kerry Brown, I think, is going to be more of your Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
In terms of strong safety, I've also can see him playing some nickel. You can move him around quite a bit. I know that Danny Collins talked about after one of the more recent fall practices that they had Kerry Brown at 4 or 5, potentially even 6 different positions in that fall practice, trying to figure out what can Kerry do. because they have to replace Jack Henderson at nickel. And then Aiden Goosby, I just hope that what we saw after that, I think it was the USC game, where he was among the surest tacklers on the entire defense and was good in coverage. Like, I hope that's the guy who shows up for all 12, all 13 games here, because if that's the case, you've got three good safeties, and then you're trying to figure out a way to get guys like Garrison Monroe on the field, the former Shakopee guy. I know that Darius Green is a guy that I've written about here in fall camp that has battled injuries, just debilitating injuries,
yeah,
the last two seasons, and just hasn't been able to get healthy and then stay healthy. Well, he's healthy right now, and he's playing that early down nickel role, where it's going to be frustrating for me to make a depth chart here next week, or even maybe towards the end of next week, because there's just so many different packages where if they're playing Buffalo versus they're playing Oregon versus they're playing Wisconsin versus Iowa versus whatever the team is that week, you're going to see certain guys play 10 snaps one week and then 35 snaps to 45 snaps the next week. It's just trying to figure out where it all fits into the puzzle, Luke, is going to be very interesting for me to see with Danny at safety. Now, a corner, I just don't know how you can view corner as anything other than a step back. And that's not the fault of, I mean, it is what it is when you graduate a four-year starter in Justin Wally. Ethan Robinson was, I would say, an above-average Big Ten corner. And Zaquan Bryan just is unproven. And we're talking about a guy who hasn't really played a ton. He's played about 250, 275 snaps on defense. Now, he's done some things with them. I'm not going to disagree with you. Mm-hmm. But if that's the cornerstone of the room, you can see my hesitation here. Because I think if you look at who is going to be competing for playing time, I would tell you three guys come to mind for based on what I've seen with my own eyes and based on what I've heard from sources. And I'd say the first guy that comes to mind here is John Nestor, which is the Iowa corner. Luke has coined him Minnesota's version of Jason Sehorn. I'm not entirely sure what he's trying to say with something like that, but I'll let you get your thoughts and feelings into his email about such comparisons, Mr. Buehr. I don't know why he would say things such as that.
That was good, Ryan.
But it's going to be fascinating for me to see how that plays, because I think John Nestor can help you at nickel. I think he could potentially help you a corner, even though I want to see him cover more and cover more consistently than what I've seen so far in fall camp. But he's probably the guy, I would guess, as of right now. Now, that's not to discount somebody like, say, Naeem Paris, the true freshman from Bergen Catholic, or a guy like Mike Gerald, who has played extensively here in the offseason, who is a redshirt freshman that I know they really like as well. I think after those three, then you can get into another tier drop down to the Jalen Bowdens of the world, the transfer from North Carolina Central, or a guy like Rylan Kelly, Evan Redding, Simon Seidel, guys like that. But you're going from almost 2,400 collegiate snaps from Justin Wally, and then another essentially 2,400 from Ethan Robinson at the collegiate level. Now, Ethan played almost 800, which led the entire Gopher defense last year. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can go from seeing that amount depart and then seeing what's going to be coming in and instead and say there's not going to be a drop-off, because there will be.
Yeah.
And that's not their fault, because now this is, you know, you rode the crest and now you got to come down on the backside before you can go back up again. I'm not saying that there won't be good days for the Gopher corners. I think there will be. I just think it's going to be a little bit more rocky than what fans are used to seeing here the last couple of years.
Yeah, and the other reality is, like, we had, I wouldn't say like heightened expectations for Ethan Robinson, but we knew we were getting somewhat of a proven commodity. It's just whether or not he was going to be able to step up to the Big Ten level and do it, you know, at the same efficiency or the same effectiveness, right? And they nailed it. He was really good. To your point, he was above average corner. Now you're kind of doing that, but you're doing that on both sides, right? You had the luxury of having Justin Wally come back, and the safeties, as a result, benefited from the fact that those two corners were there, as well as Jack Henderson in the role that he played. But ultimately, this year, it's kind of the role reversal, right? You've got experienced safeties, but the inexperienced corner. So let's see if Danny Collins and, I was going to use the nickname of the defensive back coach, Monroe.
Swag Daddy.
Y'all, I lost
the
it there.
Pride of Matamidi, Minnesota, baby.
Swag Metro Daddy.
Stand up.
Yeah. So, but I was going to say, let's see if that combination can find a way to kind of pull a rabbit out of a hat again and have a really, really solid secondary. I'm going to temper my expectations, but in the end, I think that they've proved it once. Let's see if they can do it again.
And as much as it is about my, I guess, questions with them in coverage, I think we also underrate how good of tacklers Wally and Robinson were.
Yeah, really good
in
point.
In space or being able to shed blocks at the line of scrimmage. And I haven't seen these guys do it. Whereas I saw Robinson and Wally do it. Like, there's questions that have to be answered with that group, which is why if you wanted to say corner is arguably the biggest question mark on the defense, I think they would be in that tier for me. There's, like I said, you got Zaquan Bryan, then you got some younger names like Mike Gerald, Naeem Parrish, the transfer by the name of John Nestor from Iowa. Mm-hmm. Luke continues to put on his Jason Sehorn jersey as I'm staring at him here over the Zoom. I don't know what that means, but let's keep going. Like, I know they like Nestor and I know they like those other guys, but
yeah,
they need to find out during the non-conference, which is why I wouldn't be shocked at all to see you the corner rotate a little bit more than what we're used to.
All right, let's catch a break, and then we'll talk linebacker, we'll talk defensive end, we will talk defensive tackle, and then special teams. Ryan, I know we've talked about this before, but we have to talk about it again. Blue Horizon Energy is a turnkey solar power system for commercial buildings. They build and maintain these for, you know, farmers, for commercial buildings. We obviously talk a lot about farmers because of my dad is one of their proud customers, and honestly, they're just a great, great organization to work with.
And if you don't believe Luke's father, which I don't know why he wouldn't, he's an outstanding man, just ask the folks at the Minnesota Star Tribune, as Blue Horizon Energy just won gold as they were voted Minnesota's best commercial solar energy provider. So what we want you to do is, if you have a farm, if you own a commercial business, we want you to go to Blue Horizon Energy, all one word, bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Fill out the form today, and like we talked about earlier, turnkey solar power systems for your farm or commercial business.
Okay, as we return, we'll talk a little linebacker, Ryan. For departures, you have Cody Lindenberg that's off and playing, a seventh-round draft pick that's playing with the Raiders. Outside of that, you lost a couple other guys that just really didn't contribute a ton, right? And then you have returning, you have Maverick Baranowski, who really stepped into a role. We had questions because he had a struggle his freshman year, but he really took a step forward. And then you've got Dev Williams, who's played a fair amount. You hope that he takes another step. You've got guys like Joy Gerlach, Matt Kingsbury, and then you've got a couple transfers. I know there's the guy from Oklahoma State, and then you've also got incoming freshman Emmanuel Carmo, who I know you're really high on. I imagine mm-hmm. If you're playing Ryan Bingo or Ryan Burns Bingo, make sure you add Twitched Up here in this part.
Can we get Drumbeat also on there?
Drumbeat, okay, good. And then you've got stalwarts like Derek LeCaptain, who's been around forever. Will be playing his final college football. Linebacker is just interesting to me, Ryan. You have Maverick, who really came on last year, did struggle a little bit with injury, but fought through it largely. And linebackers just take a beating anyway, right? You will talk about defensive tackle, but you know, the ability of linebackers to be able to execute is somewhat in tandem with defensive tackle, which we know the front line, they're pretty strong. But after that, if you rotate in, so it gets a little bit more challenging. I guess my question here ultimately is, who's going to play alongside Maverick, and where are we going to see realistic, you know, a realistic maybe two deep here?
Those are outstanding questions. And unfortunately, the answer, at least that I'm going to give, and then I'll explain it, is I don't know a ton about linebacker. Now, I know the names better than 99% of the people, but I haven't seen it with my own two eyes, because in the spring and in the fall, I think I've probably seen combined 20, 25 plays that have been tackling all the way to the ground, of which, I mean, if that's my sample size, Luke, to evaluate a position like linebacker, which so much of it is tackling and block shedding and things of that nature, like that, it's a position to me that you have to evaluate in live football,
yeah.
Not 7-on-7, yeah. Not as PJ Fleck will scream into the stadium microphone, thud butt, or whatever the different type of anything else besides actually tackling. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so much unknown to me because, to your point, it's Maverick, Baranowski, and then what? Well, the then what is going to be a multiplicity. It's going to be a multitude of different guys because mm-hmm. I think some games you are going to see Dev Williams. Some games you are going to see a Jeff Roberson, but now that's assuming Jeff Roberson is healthy, of which if he is not healthy tomorrow for the open practice, and that means he's missed over a week of time during fall camp, I mean, his snaps are just going to go somewhere else for now. And two guys that they might go to are Matt Kingsbury and then Emmanuel Carmo, you mentioned. Like, Kingsbury to me is one of the guys on the defensive side of the ball that has been kind of one of the risers in fall camp, where the coaches love to talk about him, the players love to talk about him. When they do things in kind of an early down type of situation where it's first and 10, second and 10, like, he's going to be on the field. He is more of your, if you're thinking about body types, like, he is your early down run stuffer. He's got the neck roll. He's bigger inside.
Yeah.
Like, he is your rundown stopping Big Ten linebacker. Whereas a guy like Devin Williams, I think, is more of, he can do that, but he also can hopefully cover a little bit better than what Kingsbury can. And then the wild card of this whole group, and I don't even know that putting him at linebacker is kind of doing justice to what he is the going to be the true freshman Emmanuel Carmo. Mm-hmm. Because I've said this before and I'll say it again, I don't know that I have a great comp for him in terms of what we've seen from Gopher defenses in my now 15 years, because I think he is a 3-4 outside linebacker that is going to be put into a 4-3 defense. And what do I mean by that? I think there will be some downs that he will line up as a traditional linebacker, but the beauty of Emmanuel Carmo is you can line him up essentially anywhere between the tackles. Like, you can line him up on the edge to try and win against an offensive tackle on a passing down. You can blitz him as a guy standing in the A or the B gap. You can sit him there as a traditional linebacker. You're just going to see Emmanuel Carmo, in my opinion, move around a lot. Now, if you're asking me, and I know you're not, I'm answering my own hypothetical questions at this point. Like, I think Emmanuel Carmo is going to have a much bigger role than I anticipated, I think, probably 2-3 weeks ago. Now, what does that look like? I mean, Coy Parrish last year, do you want to guess how many snaps Coy Parrish played?
You mean first half of the year and second half of the year? Because it was drastically different.
It was. Yeah, I'll get into that, but I would just say overall, how many snaps do you think that Coy Parrish played last year?
Like 340?
Played 420.
Oh, man, that was okay. Close.
Which, to your point, he didn't really even play until the USC game, and then he played like his he was on fire until Illinois and Rutgers, where he struggled a little bit, and then he came back against Penn State, Wisconsin, and Virginia Tech and played better. But that's kind of the thing I see for Carmo is, if he continues to excel at his specific role, which I think Emmanuel, my expectations for him this fall, again, former number one player in the state, Robbinsdale Cooper, 4-star kid, I think we're going to be looking at a guy who plays, I don't know, 20, 25 snaps a game. Mm-hmm. But he is going to be a passing down linebacker, passing down defender, whatever you want to call him, because to me, where Emmanuel Carmo shines is with his first step. I mean, you'll remember us talking about for years that Jot Joyner's first step was his best asset, where he could get a great get off on the offensive tackle or the offensive lineman and be able to cause havoc around the quarterback. That's what Emmanuel Carmo's 2025 role is to me. is to try and cause as much havoc in Danny Collins' havoc defense as he can. Now, how much that's going to be is going to be up to Carmo. How much can he handle? I still think they're figuring that out. But you're going to just see multiple linebackers back. Like I said, I think Baranowski leads the room in snaps at the end of the year. But you'll see guys like Kingsbury, Dev Williams, Carmo. We'll see. I'm very fascinated to see what Joey Gerlach does, because he is a guy that I haven't seen do much during fall camp.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's just going to be a Sam linebacker, which is about, it's not a huge role, but it's a role. Unfortunately for a guy like Mason Carrier from Detroit Lakes, I know a lot of people are like, well, what's happening with him? He's just not healthy. He hasn't been healthy at any practice I've been at. I'll tell you, he looks like Tarzan. And if he can stay on the field, I mean, he's, to me, very similar to a guy like Matt Kingsbury, where you just figure it out and put the neck roll on him and let him be downhill physical linebacker guy. But Carrier's got to stay healthy. So a lot of different names at linebacker, Luke. And I know it's going to be a lot, especially in the early part of the season, for fans to try and grasp.
Yeah.
But I think the days of kind of keeping the same 11 or 11 guys on the field are very much over, at least for this fall.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's chat a little bit about defensive end. Again, you lose a lot at this position, right? You lose Jod Joyner, who graduated. You lose Danny Strigow that graduated. Both are playing in the NFL at this point. Strigow had a strip sack the other day for the Panthers. Joyner is out playing with the Raiders, over with Cody Lindenberg. Now, you also have a lot of talent returning as well. You have Anthony Smith, who arguably could be the best defender on the defense, probably the most valuable player on the defense. I know many are going to point to Coy, but given the lack of depth that they have at defensive line and the versatility that Anthony Smith brings, he's probably about as important. You've got Lucas Finnessy, who's played a lot of football for the Gophers, maybe not consistently, but he has played a lot. You also have Jackson Howard, who came in, a highly ranked kid as well. He'll be returning. So you've got some guys, but you know, this is, the depth is the question, and it's going to be the question of the defensive line as we go forward.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of laid it out the way that you did for this group. It's another group where it's, what are their roles? Because we saw Jod Joyner and Danny Strigow play a ton of football for Minnesota. And I just think you're going to see, outside of Anthony Smith, of which I'm with you that I guess I'm irrationally high on Anthony Smith. Again, I think he's coming off one of the quietest 11 and a half tackles for loss seasons that I can remember from a Gopher defender.
Yeah.
But he is that valuable to me. And I agree with you because of what you said. There is nothing close to Anthony Smith behind him. Mm-hmm. And that is my worry at this position, both the five technique and then at R, where Danny Strigow was. Now, if we're going to start at R, I think where I'm at 2 weeks out from the opener is you're going to see much more of a rotation, I think, between Jackson Howard, the former number one player in the state, and then Carter Menz, who I think just gives you a little bit something different, a different pitch than what I think Jackson Howard is. Now, he's also the former number one player in the state of North Dakota, but that's where I'm very interested. There may be no player on defense, Luke, that at least in the non-conference, I will be watching closer than Jackson Howard, because I'm still curious about what he is. Like, is he a bull rush guy? Is he a speed guy? Mm-hmm. Is he kind of more of an all-around player? I think personally for me, like, I think expectations should be lower for Jackson Howard this year than what probably most fans think, considering his prospect pedigree. But what I think his role is for this 2025 defense, and he's got every opportunity to make me look like a fool and then earn more snaps, is just a run stopper. Now, again, that's kind of the biggest crux of this entire defense, is I have no idea if they can stop the run, because when Devin Eastern and Anthony Smith and Jalen Logan Redding aren't on the field, I would tell you that this front seven has struggled to stop the Gopher offense in terms of their run game.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a run game of which we have spent way too much time on the last 12 months, but we all know how inconsistent it was. And now they got five new starters on the offensive line. So how much of that is the run game is better? How much of that is the run defense isn't as good? I don't know, and I wish I knew the answers to that. Mm-hmm. But if Jackson Howard can just stop the run, he's going to play a lot of snaps for Minnesota.
Oh, for sure.
That's what every team is going to try to do to Minnesota, in my opinion, is make them prove that without Strigow, Ja, Cody, that they can stop the run. Now, I also think Carter Mentz is a guy who has earned more snaps, at least in my mind. Now, he is a longer speed rusher type compared to a guy like Jackson Howard, where I think he's the better pass rusher of the two of them. He's definitely the better speed rusher. I've seen him bat multiple passes at the line of scrimmage. I know the consternation from fans about Carter Mentz is they all think he still needs to put on another 10 pounds. Everyone, he is 245 pounds, which is about normal for what has played at the rush end position in the Big Ten, mm-hmm. or at least for Minnesota there. I also would tell you, I'm not as worried about rush end because I don't know that it's going to matter for passing downs. What do I mean by that? I mean, I think Danny Collins just brings in five pass rushers and lines them up kind of like Mike Zimmer style, Corey Heatherman style, and says, go get the quarterback. Like, line up three, four, five guys at the line of scrimmage, send three or four or maybe five, but you don't know where they're coming from, which ones are going, which ones aren't. Because I just don't think they have a guy like Strigow or Joyner in this defensive end group, especially at R, that can do it. Like, win consistently in pass rush. And that's where Carmo's going to get a look there, I believe. Kingsbury's going to get a look there. You look at Anthony Smith again. I think Anthony Smith is easily going to go in the first round of our draft here coming up here, Luke. Oh, yeah. Our draft, not the NFL draft, yeah, to be draft. Clear here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will tell you, I do believe that Anthony Smith is going to be the next top 60 selection in the 2026 NFL draft, which is going to continue that streak for Minnesota. Now, he's got to continue to put it together. And I'll tell you, I was talking to a guy on the sidelines here during fall camp, and he kind of pointed something out to me with Anthony and just with kind of defensive linemen in general that I think explains pass rush to an extent that people like me can understand it. I think you think about a guy like Boye Mafe, Luke. Mm-hmm. I think Boye Mafe won. How do I want to phrase this? When he won pass rush reps, it wasn't on purpose. Like, he had one move. It was the speed rush, turn the corner. Like, he had his one pitch. And that's where with Anthony, I know that he can bull rush, but I want to see more in his bag. I mean, I want to see him have a second pitch or a third pitch if we're going to get into some horrible baseball analogies.
Sure.
I want him to be able to win on purpose, where he can watch something on tape and say, this guard or this tackle stinks at the bull rush, so I'm going to try that. This guy sucks with spins. This guy sucks with club. This guy sucks with speed, whatever it is. Because Anthony Smith has an opportunity to be one of the best Gopher defensive linemen in my 15 years of covering this team. Like, there have been game wreckers. Like, I think about Rashid Hagman's final season. I think Steven Richardson did some really good things. Carter Coughlin was fantastic when it was going well for him. We talk about guys like Boye Mafe and that too. But I think Anthony Smith has a chance to be one of those game wreckers, and this defense is going to need it. Now, the question is, who in the world plays behind him, and how big is the drop-off? Because Anthony Smith can't play every snap.
No.
Like, he played over 500 snaps last year at five, at three, at different spots at one. He shed over 15 pounds, of which he's talked to me about at Big Ten Media Days, and you can read that story. Like, he's a very eclectic young man and someone that's easy to root for and easy to cover. But is it going to be Lucas Finneysey as a redshirt senior? Is it going to be the Illinois State transfer, Stephen Curtis? Is it going to be Rushon Lawrence, the transfer from Stony Brook, who's undersized in height but is 260, 270 pounds? Is he going to play five technique? Like, who is going to stop the run not named Anthony Smith? Because I would say pass rush, Luke, but I'm going to tell you, I can't see like a Stephen Curtis or a Lucas Finneysey being on the field in like a third and eight. I just, there's better options for Danny Collins, I believe, at this point, which leads to the disclaimer of, if I'm not talking highly about your friend or your son or whoever it is, I apologize. I have no vendetta against him. But I think that's kind of the reality for defensive end this year is, listen to the names that I just rambled through, where Jackson Howard hasn't played extensive Big Ten football. Mm-hmm. Neither has Carter Menz. Neither has really Lucas Finissey, Stephen Curtis, Rushon Lawrence. Like, is Jalen Hicks going to bump outside, a redshirt freshman that we'll talk about a defensive tackle here in a second? Like, these are all guys that just haven't played. And so I don't have a baseline expectation for these guys. And I would tell you, I would start it low and kind of go up from there. But that's my worry is, does Minnesota really have much depth? And then even just high-end stuff at defensive end, not named Anthony Smith this year, is one of the questions that they have to answer throughout the season.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a fair assessment. And it will be interesting to see who steps up. You just got roles that people have to fill. And this is no more true than defensive tackle, Ryan. You have Devin Eastern and Jalen Logan Redding returning. Those are going to be your starters at defensive tackle. And then after that, I just got so many question marks. I know Nate Becker has played some football. I know they had expectations for Theo Randall, but last I checked, he's been hurt. I know they had some additions in the portal. I don't know if they're going to play. You've got the guy from Stony Brook, the Purdue transfer, you know, et cetera. I just don't know. And you lose a guy like Darnell Jeffries to graduation. You lose a guy like Logan Richter. And those were your depth guys that weren't getting a lot of run last year. So very, very curious as to how defensive tackle is going to go. But the reality is, those first two guys are going to be really solid, but you're concerned with just the realities of football and will they be able to stay healthy?
This is just such a thin spot where I'm about the biggest Devin Eastern fan you can find, in my opinion, because I think he is underappreciated by this fan base for the role that he has had. I mean, he's started every game the last two seasons, former four-star kid, local kid who stayed home from Shakopee. He plays a very difficult position in this defense, which is one technique, which is, okay, he's lined up between the center and the guard every time. He's going to be eating double teams. He's doing the dirty work. And there's not a lot of fun that goes with anything related to dirty work. Yet, last season, he posted a 70 overall PFF grade. Now, Pro Football Focus grades aren't the end-all, be-all. But he is a guy that now going into his third year as a starter, I think has NFL upside. Now, it's up to him to prove over the next 13 games that NFL upside that I talk about is warranted. But I think he is a huge part of this defensive success. And then you've also got a guy like Jalen Logan Redding, who, I mean, he's played anywhere from five technique early in his career at defensive end to last year they slid him inside to three technique. I think he's going to have to play some one. Now, he was all Big Ten honorable mention in 24, but they're just so thin here. I mean, we talk about how thin they were at defensive end, and maybe I'd be remiss, I guess, if I didn't mention the name Adam Kasai as a redshirt freshman out there at defensive end too. But like, my issue with defensive tackle is they've already been bitten by the injury bug, and we're not even to the first game yet, where they took a transfer from Purdue by the name of, I'm going to screw up the last name here, and I'm going to feel like Luke Buehr in doing so. Mo Adamonde.
Sure.
Something along those lines, of which played a lot of one technique for Purdue the last couple of seasons. He can't even walk correctly in fall camp, and that's a problem.
Yeah,
and that, I mean, that's a good big problem for a guy that they were projecting to play 200-300 snaps at one technique. Now, why can't he walk? Because he had off-season back surgery from his time at Purdue last year. Now, you're thinking to yourself, well, then why the heck did Minnesota take him? Well, Minnesota has Purdue's defensive coordinator from last year on staff, Kevin Kane. And I would imagine his input was very valuable at the time to them about what was the injury, what was everything that was going on. And then I'm sure that the young man sent over his scans to the Gopher training staff, and they cleared it. But I'm just telling you right now, I'm almost to a point where I haven't heard much optimism about him playing at this point, like at all for Minnesota. I would hope that my sources there proven wrong as time goes on. But if he can't even play, I mean, you wish you could go back to the spring and take another one technique, because that's a problem. Because the guy who is going to be pushing him for defensive tackle number two behind Eastern there was Theo Randall, who is a redshirt sophomore from Texas. I've heard it's a foot injury, and he, last I saw, was in a walking boot getting around on a scooter. To me, that doesn't signal he's going to be ready anytime soon to be able to play, which means you're already down your second string one technique, potentially your third string one technique, and Devin Eastern is coming off a season in which he's surpassed all career highs in snap counts. I don't care who plays there, Luke. That's my point here. I don't care if it's Jalen Logan Redding sliding over. I don't care if it's Nate Becker, the pride of Maple Grove. Him as a fifth-year guy, potentially earning some snaps. Maybe it's the former number one player in the state of North Dakota, Riley Sunrum, getting some snaps as a redshirt freshman. I don't care who it is. I just don't want Devin Eastern to be gassed by the time Iowa comes around, because he has to play 50, 60 snaps a game.
Yeah.
That's not how this team, this Gopher football team in 2025, this is not how they hit their ceiling. They have to play guys. Now, their issue is they just have so many guys who can play three technique, but not one technique. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rushon Lawrence, the Stony Brook transfers, 270 pounds. That guy can't eat double teams. You look at a guy like Jalen Hicks as a redshirt freshman. He's probably 270 pounds. He's more of a speed type of rusher, of which I know that there are some big fans of Jalen Hicks behind the scenes on the Gopher staff. I think he's probably going to play this fall some three techniques, some five technique. He's from the New York City area. But I think he's probably playing a year too soon just because they don't have a ton of depth there.
Yeah.
I don't care. And I know that people are tired of me saying it just like this, but like, they just have to play guys and find out what they have, especially in the non-conference behind. Like, I know what I have in Jalen Logan Redding, Anthony Smith, and Devin Eastern, of which, I mean, that's about as good of a starting three that the University of Minnesota can trot out onto a field.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Like, that is a really good starting point. But the question is, then what? Like, is Jackson Howard ready? Is Carter Menz ready? Is Jalen Hicks ready? Is Nate Becker ready? Is Adam Kasai ready? Like, who is ready? And they're not going to know. I mean, they know. They think they know here during fall camp. But once the lights start to come on against Buffalo, Northwestern State, and Cal, they got to have this thing ready to go after the first bye week when that gauntlet comes of six games in 6 weeks for Big Ten play. That is my worry with this defense, is they have top end talent. Like, Anthony Smith is going to continue that streak that I think Coy Parrish can then continue on the next year after that. Like, you got guys like Devin Eastern and Kerry Brown. Like, it's just, what else do you have? And I'm just skeptical to an extent that there isn't a drop off. And what I mean by that is just overall, you've got a first-year coordinator who's calling plays for the first time in his life at like a high-pressure level. And he's doing so with guys around him that, yes, there's high-end talent, but there's also – they're going to be breaking in 10-plus new guys who are figuring out what their role is and how do they do underneath the lights or on a Saturday afternoon. There's just a lot of moving pieces here. I think they're kind of a year away on that aspect as Danny Collins gets everything dialed in. But this defensive line has got a shot to be really good. But with an injury here and there, they also have a shot to be, oh boy, like, teams are just going to run the ball at will against them if that's going to be the case, if they get an injury here or there. It's got talent, Luke. It's just very thin, at least in my eyes, compared to what we've seen.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is both of these statements can be true. This is probably the most talented group that PJ Fleck has maybe had on the top end at defensive end or defensive line, But then beyond that, this might be the biggest question marks you have at defensive line after those top three. I hope that this is another situation, optimistically, that we're proven wrong and that these guys do step up. But between, you know, the injuries that you cite and then just the lack of experience, this is the biggest question mark. And as you know, it's hard to win games when you can't stop the run. So you have to be able to stop the run.
And the beauty of it, too, is for Danny Collins and for any Big Ten defense, opposing Big Ten offenses generally compared to the defenses are not very, I mean, it's a step down. Like, I look at like the Buffalo Bulls on paper, of which it's crazy to me that we get to record a game preview for this in about 2 weeks' time. Like, Buffalo is a good MAC team, but they're not world beaters on offense. Like, I think the strength of their team is defensively. Northwestern State, I mean, we don't have to spend any time there. Like, third game of the season, your first road game against Cal, their entire offense left via the transfer portal. Any good player left.
Yeah.
So Danny Collins gets two games of tape to figure out what the now talent-deficient Cal offense looks like in a game in which, I will tell you, if you can score 21 points, you should come out of Cal Berkeley with a win. And then you get Ethan Calliope-Manis, and yes, defending then Jeremiah Smith and Ohio State's going to be difficult, but Purdue doesn't scare me. Like, there's not a lot of Big Ten offenses on this slate outside of, I would tell you, Oregon and Ohio State, which obviously, yes. But it's like, is the third best quarterback that Danny Collins and this defense is going to face, is it like Mark Gronowski or Dylan Raiola? Like, if that's the case, like, the bar to clear, I think the point I'm trying to make here is this. I don't expect a top 10 defense like we've seen the last couple of seasons. I just don't think that they have the depth to be able to do that consistently week in and week out. I still think it can be a good defense. I do. I just don't think it's going to be a great defense because there's just so much that they have to figure out. And to expect them to figure it out on the fly, I don't know that is realistic, but you know me. I'm Johnny Raincloud, Mr. Buehr.
Yeah, you absolutely are. Speaking of a Johnny Raincloud, let's talk about a topic that you are well-renowned for being a Johnny Raincloud about. This is special teams. This is a group that you have, what do we say? Trash to a certain extent, maybe poured salt on the wound, just maybe given general shade towards, in recent years, largely all under PJ Flex watch. But yeah, let's talk about this group. Can I read for the group a message that I sent you? When we were at the very first practice,
Is it PG-13 related, Mr. Buehr?
It's PG-13 related.
All right. Just a disclaimer for those people with children in the car.
Yeah, small sample size, but Ryan, couple puns have you a little aroused.
And what did I respond back?
LMFAO. I said the exact same thing to Hollis. They both look good, and even the kickers did well from 40 and in. Like, I
hope this is the year that they got their a punter.
I really hope. Yeah, I do too. I was not the biggest fan of the Mark Crawford experience.
Great dude. Which,
yes,
he is still in and around the Gopher football program.
Oh, good for him. He's still in America. Like, they haven't deported him yet.
Jesus,
what?
I have talked to him about his whole visa situation.
Well, I didn't even know his visa situation.
Sure, not for me to share.
Yeah, we can swing both sides on this podcast. I'm telling you, if you are a big supporter of UFC, Paramount Plus. If you also for Paramount Plus, if you want to get your South Park, you got that too. So,
yeah, I noticed when I came over the other day, Luke, that your doormat out front. Do you know that the pineapples are facing a certain direction? Like, is there something you were trying to tell me in my life? I don't know if this is the time to say so, but look, it's going to make for an interesting post-production meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Now,
Luke's right. When I say, I don't know that it's legal for me to feel this way, but I feel pretty decent about special teams right now. Now I feel decent. I feel good about punting. I feel great about the return game. And I'm very curious about place kicking. I'll say this. Dragan Kesic did a lot of good things, but last year was below average. And look at a team that went 7-5. And I would tell you now that I, at least in my opinion, I think they underachieved last year.
In special teams, yes.
I think overall.
Well, yeah, yeah, as a team.
7-5 with the roster that they had, especially you mentioned Danny Strigo had a strip sack in a preseason game. Max Brosmer threw a touchdown.
Yeah.
Like, they had top-end talent.
Yeah.
Like, Ariante Irisarie, Daniel, like, the list goes on and on. But they were bad in one-possession games. They were 3-5. Why? Because PJ Fleck teams, I think we've learned, like, they live in the margins, I'll say.
But can we be really honest, though? That is going to be college football going forward. That's what the NFL is, in large part. It's close, low-margin games.
Well, my point being, if you're going to live in that area,
yeah,
where PJ Fleck wants to be conservative and be trestle ball, you better be good on special teams, and they were not good on special teams last year. Like, they were 11th in the Big Ten in field goal accuracy. They were, you got 41 yards, you got 38 to 41 yards in a cloud of dust in the punt game, whether you needed 38, 48, or 58. Like, I'm not disagreeing that Mark Crawford wasn't a good corner kicker, but flipping the field, it was just not good.
And
even just trying to get consistent punts from him outside of punting from an opponent's, say, 45-yard line, they weren't good. And place kicking took a step back. And, like, let's start with the good. Let's start with the really good, I think.
Actually, can we back up just 1 second? Because I think that when it comes to place kicking and, you know, the step down, we talked about this at the time, I think it's worth remembering, Dragan was also strut out there for the most 50-yard field goals maybe likely in program history. It was a large number relative to the season before. He also didn't kick as well, but also it was in a way a decision made in theory by PJ, a theoretical or strategic decision made by PJ.
Game theory.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Gosh.
Game theory, where multiple things are true with this. Minnesota attempted more field goals than any other team in the Big Ten. Minnesota missed more field goals than every team but Washington in the Big Ten, of which they were tied with. And to kind of say it like that, I don't think gives full representation to what it was, because in that same breath, Minnesota was tied for second with the most field goal makes across the conference. Yep. But I think the most accurate depiction of this is just the field goal percentage, of which Minnesota was below average. They were 11th. And to Luke's point, a lot of that came from, I'll say, 40-plus. But that's kind of my interesting thing. If you really want to get deep into the weeds with it, is PJ Fleck game theory with unproven commodities at kicker. Like, you either are using Brady Denenberg, who is a transfer from Syracuse, who has a gigantic leg. Like, he has a Dragan Kesic-esque leg, of which he can make it, if he connects, easily from 55. Now, the issue is he doesn't know where the ball is always going, which is why in his career, he is 3-9 from 40-plus yards, and part of why he lost the Syracuse kicking competition as the season went on.
Yeah.
Now, the hope would be, on Minnesota's end of things, that reuniting with his former special teams coordinator and Bob Ligashevsky, of which he was with at Syracuse for a couple of years, like, Denenberg is going to be the kickoff guy replacing Kesic, and I still expect Minnesota to be among the top teams in college football in touchback percentage. But the question is, what is realistic expectations for whether it's Denenberg, whether it's the true freshman from Alexandria and Daniel Jackson? I mean, I'll throw it to you like this. The, I guess, average, like, the 9th place field goal percentage in the Big Ten last year was, I think, 76%. Like, if I got that from Gopher Kickers this fall, I would take that 100 out of 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're either running out a true freshman, of which Minnesota has done before. They did that with your guy, Michael Lance.
Yeah.
back during that magical 2019 season, of which Edina tennis legend Justin Gard reminded me today earlier on the Parent Spare podcast that special teams that season were a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, I want to believe that between Jackson and Denenberg, they can get some competent kicking. But if they're below average in kicking again, my point, kind of coming back to it here, is it's tough for me to project this team with more than 7 wins because they're going to be in a ton of one possession games, because that's the Big Ten and that's college football now. And if you don't have a reliable kicker, are we really going to, am I really going to be led to believe that in the fourth quarter, instead of attempting a 49-yard field goal on 4th and 2, 4th and 3, that PJ Fleck is actually going to go for it with a redshirt freshman quarterback? Like, that is the fascinating part of this season to me, is because last season they attempted 28 field goals. In the Michael Lance true freshman era in 2019, now part of it was because they were the greatest show on Huntington Bank, then TCF Bank Stadium turf, and they were scoring points left and right. Michael Lance only attempted 11 field goals. Like,
yeah, drastic difference.
It's very, very different. So what do I think Fleck will do? I don't know, but you're going to need a kicker at some point here. So that's where I also think, if you want to dream on the season and say, all right, Ryan, show me a path to 8, 9, 10 wins, I'd love to have a Torrey Taylor at punter like Iowa always has, where they always win on the margins in field position. Minnesota has been god-awful at field position, whether it's been in the return game or their punting game. That's a part of this where they just have not been good. Mm-hmm. And Tom Weston, who is the new Australian punter transfer, of which, Luke, do you know what college he's from?
No, but I remember it was like a D2, and it sounded like a prep school. That's all I remember.
It was a D2 in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's called Wackahatchee. Of which I'm sure there's an Oklahoma native, someone who knows what I'm trying to say, and they're going to say, Ryan, that was an abomination to the English language, of which I will say I agree with you. I don't pretend to be a linguist. I try my best. But Tom Weston has looked really good so far at fall camp, both with distance and being able to pin the opposing punt returner between the numbers and the sideline. Now, they've also got UCLA's starting punter and Brody Richter on staff from last season, and we'll see how he continues to work into the mix. I don't know if they're going to have one guy as a field flipper, one guy as a between kind of the 20s, another guy as a sky punt corner, pin him inside the 10. I am kind of excited to see that if Fleck can actually flip fields and do what Iowa has done to teams forever, which is death by a thousand cuts of field position. Maybe that's going to be one of the identities of this team, is field position and their punting game being able to save them. I'm not sure, but I think maybe even more excited than that, Luke, is there is no reason, zero reason, to be explicitly clear here, why this isn't the year that the return touchdown streak doesn't end. Because Coy Parrish is back. At any point, I think every listener knows he can break it. But you also add A.J. Turner from Marshall, who was an all-Sun Belt return man. You've also got guys like Logan Loya, who is the UCLA punt returner the last couple of seasons, I believe. You are as dynamic as you've been on special teams. Plus, if Quentin Redding is healthy, now he's battling some injuries here in fall camp. Like, there's no reason why this can't be the year that, for the first time since 2018, of which Luke has multiple children that were not born yet, that are now like seven.
Six,
now
six,
seven.
Six. But yes.
God, I'm getting all worked up and upset that even the return game can't consistently give Minnesota field position edges where, again, I know I'm the wrong person to tell all listeners this, but it's seemingly 80% of kick returns for the last 6 years have lost Minnesota somewhere around 7 to 9 yards of field position. Imagine you're actually able to gain yards of field position. That excites me. Coy Parrish with the ball in his hand excites me. A.J. Turner with the ball in his hand excites me. Like, they have the dynamic skill set in the return men. Now it's about executing the blocking scheme in front of them, which, let's see it, Ligashevsky. But this is me saying explicitly, for the lovely people off 15th Street in Dinkytown that I know are listening to this, I'm optimistic that special teams at the University of Minnesota can be an asset. And no, I'm not being held against my will.
I'm going to clip that 100%. And it's just going to be a nice little clip that we're going to throw out on social media. And I got to imagine it goes viral.
This is what I'm here for, is for the clickbait. You know me.
Yeah, it's a good strategy to help grow the pod. You know, I appreciate it. Okay. Well, we're going to record again here with Daniel House soon. We're gonna do it live all together in the same room. I'm looking forward to that. That's a first for us, I think. That'll be very fun.
And then
a
week from today, probably, or in the next 10 days, you'll also get the season preview episode out, of which I will give my official prediction. So will Luke. And then 2 weeks from today, Luke, I think we'll be recording the Buffalo game preview. So you've waited all summer.
Yeah.
Starting to crank out more episodes, and then starting Buffalo week, you get twice a week Gopher Gridiron Radio. So we are very, very excited to get back into the swing of things.
Yeah, for sure. Again, I want to thank Blue Horizon Energy for supporting the podcast and making this possible. Most importantly, we want to thank all of you for listening. It's always fun to talk some Gopher football as we walk our way to the 2025 season. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.